Blog Talk Radio.
Today, here on Cincy Business Talk with Mike Roth, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer, we'll be talking to business leaders about how they have grown their businesses and people. We discuss new strategies, tactics, and philosophies which lead to positive growth in our marketplace. Our program is sponsored by Sandler Training by Roth & Associates. Each week, we'll talk with our best Cincinnati area top executives about their tools and insights. Our regular listeners will be given the edge that will help them win in a competitive environment which we live. Simple solutions to complex problems which challenge all of us are rarely correct. We will address complex problems or opportunities with appropriate solutions. If you have questions or comments, contact Mike at mikeroth@rothconsulting.net or call Mike at 513-753-9400. Now your host, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer, Mike Roth.
Thanks, Scott. This is Mike Roth, and I'm here today with Troy Augustine. Before we get started, I'll just give everyone a reminder of what's going to be coming up on November 29th. We have John Mybers from ComputerEase, and on the 30th of November, we're going to have Darby Pizakis from the Divine Group. She's going to be talking about how to select employees that really work out well in a job. And the following week, on December 6th, we're going to have Richard Brown from Emerge IT Solutions. They're a provider of voice over IP telephony systems and other IT services. And on December 7th, we're going to have Janelle Ross from Ross Motors. They're a automotive dealership. They have several brands, General Motors and Mercedes-Benz. So there'll be some interesting questions for Janine. They should be telling us about some of the new construction that she's had up at her dealerships. For Sandler clients, the Sandler Client Summit number 2, entitled No Guts, No Gain, is going to be February 14th and 15th in Orlando, Florida. It's going to be at the Buena Vista Palace Hotel and Spa in Orlando, right across the street from downtown Disney. Great place. Everything in the conference will be working towards how to get you psychologically tougher. No Guts, No Gain is the right theme. If you're a Sandler client, some people have been asking us about that $100 discount that's set to expire this week. Sandler has extended that till the end of the year. So if you want to pay $400 instead of $500, sign up for the conference. The website is www.clientsummit2013.sandler.com. Okay. Again, for both Sandler clients and non-Sandler clients, if you use networking as a business development tool, we have a 4-week networking course starting in January 2013 that's available. It's exceptionally inexpensive. I won't even announce the price. But if you're interested, you can call our office at 753-9400, the 513 area code. Now, Troy, thanks again for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Let me tell the folks a little bit about you. Troy is a director and president of and CEO of iNet Interactive, a social media company operating prominent online communities for technology professionals and technology enthusiasts. In this role, Troy oversees all business functions, including sales, marketing, product management, and business development. Troy holds an MBA from Stanford Graduate School of Business, as well as a master's degree in engineering from Stanford School of Engineering. He holds an undergraduate degree in engineering from the University of Kansas, where he serves on their advisory board. So naturally, Troy, my first question for you is, how long have you lived here in the Cincinnati market?
This is my second stint, if you will, in the Cincinnati market. I've been here for about 6 years for this stint, and prior to moving to California to go to graduate school, I lived here for about 5 years. And I guess the story is I met my wife in that first five-year period, and that's the one of the main reasons I'm back here in the area.
Ah, okay. I've heard that story many times over the last 20 years that I've lived here. People move away, and they can only stay away if you're a native for 2 years, and then the passport expires and they have to move back to town. That's an interesting anomaly. or at least for me, because I've lived and worked all over the United States. Why don't you tell our audience, Troy, a little bit about more about your company and how you got started, and maybe even about the prior company that you were involved with.
Okay, sure. So iNet Interactive is a web-centric special interest media company. So what does that mean? First and foremost, we're a media company. So just like a magazine publisher, we own a portfolio of titles that serve different special interests. And we generate revenue from advertising, from subscriptions, and from events, so trade shows, conferences, et cetera. The difference between us and a traditional media company like a magazine publisher is that rather than these titles being focused or centered around a print publication, they're centered around a website.
So you don't actually have a paper publication.
That is correct.
Like the Business Courier or the old Datamation magazine.
That's correct. It's centered around the website, and we grow from there. Now, we do physical events, conferences, trade shows, training sessions, and the like, but again, it centers around websites.
So how many trade shows a year does iNet put on? And what are they?
Yeah, so we're in four major vertical markets, all technical in nature. We have a big presence serving the web hosting industry. The second big market is the data center industry. Both of those markets are high growth markets.
High growth,
right. Mm-hmm. The end market for web hosting and the end market for data centers are growing at 15%+ annually.
Really? I've heard a story from a web hosting company that they're seeing up to a 4% degradation in market for pure hosting, and the only way they're going to survive long term is by moving into cloud computing.
Right. It depends on how you define the market. If you define the market largely enough to include cloud managed services such as managed email and disaster recovery and so forth, that's a growth market. There are certain segments like shared hosting within that big umbrella that certainly are under pressure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how many trade shows do you do?
Well, really three major ones. One called HostingCon, which is the largest trade show and conference for the web hosting industry. And then twice a year, we hold an event called Data Center World, which is the largest trade show and conference for the data center industry.
So when and where are these shows put on?
They move around the country. Our last show for HostingCon was in Boston in July. And we've got a Data Center World coming up in Nashville in October.
Opryland Hotel?
At the Gaylord, that's correct.
Okay, good. Great cities. And it's an interesting idea that you move around.
Yeah, it becomes a bit of a destination or a bit of a vacation, if you will, for the attendees in addition to actually attending the event. So we do move it around.
Sure. And how many attendees do you typically come up with these technical shows?
Yeah, it depends on the show and so forth, but with HostingCon, we're usually around 2,000 attendees. Data Center World is roughly the same size, depending on the time of year and location.
Mm-hmm. And completely different audiences.
Yes, so web hosting are the web hosting industry, usually C-level executives from the industry. The Data Center World conferences are data center professionals and facility managers who run data centers typically for Fortune 1000 companies.
Interesting. I didn't even know those shows were going on. And how did you come up with the idea of iNet Interactive?
Well, I was in California going to graduate school, joined an internet startup, so I was exposed to the internet as part of that. After we sold that company, I moved back to Ohio and was looking for something to do. And I decided rather than do a startup, I wanted to acquire a small business that I could grow. And mm-hmm. I started looking at all sorts of opportunities, manufacturing, distribution, you name it. And I kept coming back to the internet. It had a lot of the fundamentals that I was looking for in terms of the growth rates and the diverse customer base and some other characteristics that I felt were attractive. I ultimately found a little company called iNet Interactive, located in Kansas City. We acquired it, myself and a group of investors. We relocated it here to the area, and we've been growing it ever since.
And when did you acquire the company?
It was the end of 2005, so just over, coming up on 6 years.
And were they doing the same thing that you're doing now?
For the most part, on a much smaller scale. So we're about 10 times the size we were in 2006, and we're in many different markets. We added the trade show a bit, but largely the same business. As
how many employees do you have now?
We're at 52 employees.
Okay, that's pretty good size small business.
It is, and one unique thing about that is we are largely a virtual company. We have a headquarters in Westchester,
mm-hmm.
with about 22 of those people. We've got a couple small satellite offices, Toronto, Canada, Seattle, Orange County. But many of our employees work from home offices around the country. And that's just the nature of the internet business that we're in. I think we've developed some core competencies around how to manage that kind of business. It certainly is a little bit different from what most people are exposed to.
Okay. And why don't you tell our listeners again about some of the honors and awards that you've won?
Well, I think just this week, we announced that we were named to the Inc. 5000 Fastest Growing Company list for the fifth straight year. And that's one that I'm quite proud of. We've never been near the top of that list, but we've been on that list for five straight years. And to me, that's more important than being at the top. And hopefully we can continue that for the next several years. We've also been named by the Cincinnati Business Courier as one of the best places to work in Cincinnati for the past 2 years. So we, again, hope to keep that record going as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. Troy, I've got a lot more questions for you, but we're going to take a short break. And if any of the listeners want to call in and ask Troy a question, we'll be able to screen the calls during this commercial break coming up. It'll be about 2 minutes. The number to call is 646-595-4916. 646-595-4916. And we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Company-owned sales managers, are you tired of cutting your price to get the deal? Wouldn't you like to have a better way? Wouldn't you want to improve your margins? Call me, Mike Roth, at 513-646-6523 to see if there's a better way for you. This is Mike Roth, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer. Many salespeople tell us business was really easy. They likened it to gathering fruit in an orchard full of ripe trees. They gathered the low-hanging fruit. They had to get baskets to pick up the fruit that was already fallen. They never had to climb a tree. They worked this way for 10 or 15 years. Given the strong economy, this was no problem. What are you hearing now? The economy has slowed down. Salespeople are competing on price. There's still business now, but salespeople have to work harder. The fruit has not fallen from the tree, and there's no low-hanging fruit. The fruit is there, but it's higher up in the tree. The problem is their salespeople have forgotten how to climb. Do your salespeople know how to climb? If you or your team needs to learn how to climb through and up out of tough economic times, call me, Mike Roth, at 513-646-6523 or check our website at rothconsulting.net. When you hear about a typical sales training program, does it usually involve a 1 or 2 day seminar where some alleged guru passes down what he claims are the secrets to making sales? At Roth & Associates, I'm the most experienced Sandler sales trainer in Cincinnati. We recognize that truisms and motivating speeches aren't enough to arm sales teams with the tools they need for success. Sales is a hard business. Typical sales training can only provide typical and disappointing results. At Roth & Associates, we use the Sandler methodology of continual reinforcement and ongoing training seminars along with individual coaching to ensure victory in the world of sales. We've been doing it here in Cincinnati for over 15 years. You won't fail because I won't let you. Roth & Associates, 513-646-6523. 513-646-6523. On the web at rothconsulting.net. Finding power in reinforcement.
This is Mike Roth. I'm back with Troy Augustine. Troy, maybe you could share with our listeners how your company goes to market in the various markets that you serve.
Sure. So in the publishing business, there's sort of two sides to the coin. You've got to build an audience, and then you've got to find advertisers and sponsors who want to reach that audience. So, on the audience building side, that's, it's fairly technical in terms of the techniques used around search engine optimization, social media, and so forth to promote our brands and to attract people to the content we produce. So that's that side of the coin. You know, it's about generating great content that's compelling and engaging and getting that out into the social media channels and into the search engines to drive traffic. On the flip side of the coin, driving advertisers and sponsors, we serve very specific special interest topics. And within those, there are what are called endemic advertisers. In other words, those advertisers who naturally belong alongside that content. So if we are serving data center managers, there are many companies who sell services and products to the data center managers who want to reach them.
That's hardware, software, air conditioners, racks.
Yeah, raised flooring systems, et cetera, et cetera. So our sales team focuses on identifying those endemic advertisers and making contact and building a relationship. And most of that it's done via the telephone, although we do have opportunities at various trade shows and conferences, ours as well as others, to make face-to-face contact with those prospective advertisers. So,
in the magazine world, whether it's Cincinnati Magazine or the Business Courier, the circulation is audited. So advertiser knows how many real readers the publication has. How is that done for you on the web, or how do you do it?
Well, I think the web has taken it to a whole new level. Not only do we know how many readers we have, we know how many ad impressions we've delivered. The advertiser knows how many times those ads have been clicked on. And if they're selling a product over the internet, they know how many times that product's been purchased as a result of that advertising. So the trackability and accountability to the advertiser is at a whole new level when you're advertising on the internet as opposed to in print. And frankly, that's been one of the drivers for the growth of the internet, is that in these tough economic times, if a chief marketing officer has the choice between putting an ad in print where they can't necessarily show results to an ad on the internet where they can prove that it's working, they're going to choose what they can prove.
Yes, I understand that completely. Sandler's placed more than a few ads that don't work, including a couple of $1 million on golfer shirts.
Right.
I know the Sandler guys won't like it, but I don't think 2 or 3 seconds of John Rollins' shirt that says Sandler Training does much for us. My phone doesn't ring because of that.
Yeah. Now, there's clearly still a value to building a brand, and I think in some cases the internet publishers and advertisers on the internet have taken it too far to the point that it's all about direct marketing. There is clearly a value to getting your name out there and building a brand, but in these tough economic times, if it's a choice between brand building versus direct response marketing, most people are tending towards direct response marketing.
Yes, it tends to make a lot more sense. How many salespeople does your company have?
We currently have 7 salespeople.
Okay. Are they all employees of the company?
They are. They are. Half the staff is here in the Cincinnati area in our Westchester office. The other staff is scattered about the country. So as I mentioned, one of the things I think we become good at is working with these virtual teams.
So that's 3.5 guys in Cincinnati, right? And half scheduled all over the rest of the United States, kind of just like the card.
Yes, that's correct. I am an engineer, and I do a little rounding in my numbers.
Okay, but, yeah. Well, everyone knows about the 3.5 clubs.
But,
Do you use any marketing or sales partners where you have agencies that sell your services?
Yeah, on occasion. We try to sell as much as we can directly, but in the publishing world, you have this idea of remnant inventory, the unsold inventory, and we use services that will fill that for us at a lower rate than what we're able to sell direct.
So at one of these trade shows that you're running where you have 2,000 or 3,000 people coming to the show, how many trade show booths do you manage to sell?
It's in the on the order of 200, 250. So
it's a nice size show.
Yeah, it's a nice size show.
It's not one of the old Comdex shows.
No, not. Maybe someday we'll get there. But these are
I'm not sure if you want to.
These are niche markets, and we feel like we're one of the largest, if not the largest, conference in those markets, and that's where we like to be.
Mm-hmm. So you're the chief sales officer, and you get pulled into individual sales transactions by your people?
Now, we've got a very good VP of sales, Kelly Kleiner, who does a great job of managing that team. I rarely get pulled into individual transactions.
Okay. Is your role primarily planning, strategy?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, the way I view my role is, first and foremost on the people side, making sure we've got the right people in the right places,
mm-hmm.
making sure we've got the structure of the organization right, making sure we have the right culture in place. We have grown through acquisition, so that brings a whole challenge around bringing people on board with the culture and the way we like to do things.
You say you've grown through acquisition. Have you done a second acquisition besides when you bought iNet Interactive?
Yeah, most of the brands that we've tacked on to the platform are via acquisition. So we've done 12 acquisitions over the last 5 years.
Wow, that should make you an expert in acquisitions.
We certainly have learned some lessons along the way.
Okay. As you look at the marketplace today, some people say the marketplace is getting easier. Some people say it's getting harder. What do you think it is?
In a general sense, I think the economy is kind of stagnant, but we've been fortunate to be serving higher growth markets. I mentioned the data center space and the web hosting space. Both of them are growing nicely, and we've been fortunate to be serving those markets.
So you're in a growth segment.
That's correct.
Good. Why don't you tell us, our audience, what you think the possibilities are in that market space? Internet.
Well, I mean, there's so much momentum behind the internet in general. We're starting to see sort of the third generation of internet applications now. Software as a service is a given. We were just talking before the show about the CRM systems we use. I mean, the fact that we've got a team scattered about the country. An internet-based CRM system is the only way that we can do business.
Sure. You're using Salesforce.com.
That's right.
Good. And if you looked at some of our earlier guests, we have a Salesforce.com expert who has done an hour with us. You might want to go back and listen to his show.
I will.
And actually, Salesforce.com has been so popular that it's one of the three strongest supported Sandler Salesforce automation products.
Right.
We have a complete Sandler overlay for that, which makes your sales manager's job or VP of sales a lot easier. Do you see any obstacles in the marketplace to your growth?
I think the biggest thing in our business, being an internet-based publisher, is just the changing technology. We've got to move at a very rapid pace as new technologies come on board. When we started this, social media didn't exist the way we know it today with Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and so forth. That's just a given that we need to be in those channels. You've got new social media outlets coming on board like Google+ and Foursquare and you name it. We've got to stay on top of that. So that's one of the biggest challenges that we have as a business is staying on top of the emerging technologies.
So you probably have quite a few people in your company who are assigned to social media, whether it's Google+ or Foursquare.
Right. We definitely have social media marketers who do nothing but market via those channels.
Hmm. So that would make me guess you have a pretty low average age of employees in your company.
Yeah. I mean, we've got a full spectrum, but I'd say the average is on the low end.
Mm-hmm. When you talk to your prospects or your people talk to your prospects, what do you think they're looking for in a web publishing company like you?
You know, at the end of the day, as we talked earlier, it's about performance. So
ROI.
Yeah, ROI, exactly. So if I'm going to spend $5,000, am I going to make, you know, $7,500 plus in return? And you know, the results, to a large extent, speak for themselves.
Do you have a way to show that to people?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it depends on the sophistication of the client in terms of how far they track through the clicks that we drive to their website, all the way through leads that their salespeople can then follow up on. But if their systems are in place and running smoothly, they can tie it back to the ad that they ran with us.
That's great. We had the CEO of ThinkVine on the show earlier, and he's got a system, a modeling system, which is probably not applicable to you, but it's designed for packaged good companies
mm-hmm.
to figure out where to make their advertising spend to maximize their ROI. You're getting the ROI directly from clicks.
That's right. And, you know, if we don't perform, we certainly hear about it and make adjustments to optimize the client's campaign and so forth.
Mm-hmm. At any one time, roughly how many clients do you serve?
Yeah, it's somewhat unique in our business. I just looked up this number this morning. We've, over the last 12 months, done business with 4,000 plus clients.
Wow, 4,000 clients. It's a big number.
It is a big number. Now, some of those are direct accounts where our salespeople are interacting.
Mm-hmm.
We also offer a number of self-serve products. So many of those clients may be going to the website and making their orders without necessarily interacting directly with the salesperson.
Okay, so I can place an ad on a cloud computing internet magazine directly on the web without actually talking to a live human being.
Yeah, you can. That's correct.
That's good technology. Good technology. Before we go forward, let's take another short break, Troy, and we'll be listening to a Sandler Rule. We'll listen to Sandler Rule number 14. If you have any questions for Troy, you can call in on 646-595-4916.
Hi, I'm Bob Sinton of Sandler Training. I'm here today to talk to you about rule number 14. A prospect who is listening is no prospect at all. You may have heard this before, but Dave Sandler told me a long time ago that you should follow the rule called 70-30 rule, where the client talks or the prospect talks 70% of the time, and you, the salesperson, talk 30% of the time. Most salespeople I run into in my 30 years of doing this understand that. The problem with it is, how do you go about doing it? Well, most, if not all, salespeople know their features and benefits and the power of what their company can provide clients. So it's easy for them to explain their features and benefits to a client. The problem with that is it doesn't necessarily elicit responses from a client. So what we have to train ourselves to do to be more successful and more professional is take your features and benefits and phrase it and structure it in such a way where it actually elicits a conversational response from your client. For example, a feature and benefit your company may include you can reduce expenses and save them some overhead and save your clients some money in the long term or short term. Well, a lot of people can say that. That's on your website. It's on your brochure. A more effective way is to say, hey, Ed, can I ask you a question? What we've done with companies and individuals like yourself is help save them money with some software that helps them reduce expenses, get rid of waste, and adds more money to their bottom line. Do you have anything like that happening here? And if so, can you tell me a little bit about it? What that question does is it obviously elicits initially a yes or no response, but then it quickly goes down the tunnel of what I like calling a conversational dialogue, if you will, between salesperson and client, and you find yourself talking only 30% of the time, and the client ends up talking 70% of the time. And that creates a more of a win-win relationship. And that's Sandler rule number 14. A prospect who is listening is no prospect.
This is Mike Roth. I'm back with Troy Augustine. Troy, if someone wants to get a hold of you after the show or one of your people to find out more about your services or special markets, how do they do that?
There's two ways. You can go to our website, inetinteractive.com, or feel free to send me an email directly, troy@inetinteractive.com.
Good. Troy, let me ask you one of my favorite questions for the show. Is we have a theory that I developed over many years in business that simple solutions to complex problems are invariably wrong. If you want to solve a complex problem, unfortunately, you need an equally complex solution for that problem. Maybe you could share with our listeners a complex problem that you encountered, a complex solution that you devised, and maybe it'll be applicable across multiple industries.
Sure. I think I mentioned a couple times that we're unique, although I think it's the direction that many businesses are heading around having this virtual organization with some people in the headquarters, but many people working from home offices. Mm-hmm. So how do you get those people scattered about the country to feel like they're part of a team, to feel like they're part of a common culture? And how do you manage someone who is working from a home office and not in your direct line of sight? So we've done some things over the years that I think have addressed that. In terms of managing someone who you may not directly see day to day, having clear metrics in place and systems to capture those metrics is the solution that we've settled on. So we've got editors who write every day. We know whether that editor has posted articles to the web, and we know if those articles were quality based on the interaction that they're receiving in social media. We know if our salespeople are making calls because they're logging them in Salesforce. We know what their pipeline looks like. So
in Sandler, we call that activity based journaling, so you actually see the number of dials they make per day.
That's correct.
You see the number of contacts they've made, the number of people who said no, the number of people who said yes, the number of people who set up additional telecommunications with them or have set up face-to-face meetings.
Right, absolutely right. And the mantra that we have is, as an organization, and I think it's one of the reasons we've been on the best places to work list for the last couple of years, is that we don't care when or where you get the job done, as long as you get the job done. And, we've got that flexibility, but also the accountability that goes along with it.
Mm-hmm. That's good. So you put systems in place and metrics to measure that are known in advance for your employees so they can be measured from remote, what used to be called telecommuting.
Right. Absolutely right. So that solves the accountability issue. There's also teamwork and sort of cultural issue as well. How do you get people who work from a home office to feel like they're part of a broader team? And that's a tough problem. We've done some things that I think have moved us in the right direction, but I wouldn't say we've necessarily solved it completely. We've got an intranet we call INET Backyard, that sort of the water cooler, if you will, where people can chat. It's a little bit like Twitter, if you're familiar with Twitter.
Sure.
Where it's private to the company, so people can tell you what's on their mind, whether it's wishing a colleague happy birthday to I'm working on XYZ, or did you see this article over on this website? And that's kept the water cooler conversation going, even though we're in different locations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, again, one of the things that we've done.
So that can be one-to-many or one-to-one communications?
In this case, the way we've implemented it, it's one-to-many, where you're talking within the company, not outside the company. It's private within the four walls, virtual four walls of iNet Interactive.
Okay, but a sales guy, when he posts, is going to go to the editors, the developers, as well as the other sales guys, as opposed to just a group of sales guys?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
A wide open.
Right.
Interesting. Have you done anything else to solve the complex problems? Do you have company meetings via Skype or Uvu or something like that?
Absolutely. We do a monthly all-hands meeting, we call it, and it's both audio and video. So we've equipped all of our conference rooms with video mm-hmm. as one way to build that connection. So we, not only do we hold them monthly, and many people, hopefully our salespeople are out in the field selling and may not be available to attend the meeting. We'll record those, post them on our intranet, and they can view them at their leisure.
Okay, so your salespeople or your editors, wherever they happen to be, since about half of the people are not in home office, can partake in the conferences via listening to them on their time schedule.
Right, right.
Okay. And when you do the conferences, just as a technology question, how many of the remote people do you bring in on video feed at the same time?
In the case of our all hands, it's more of a broadcast where we're broadcasting the main conference room and the folks presenting. But we use a number of different technologies, Skype, GoToMeeting, and others, where you can have, I believe it's up to 6 or 8 video feeds at the same time.
Okay.
Now, I'll be frank. Everyone talks about video conferencing, there's somewhat of an underlying understanding that this is going to be a good thing. But frankly, a lot of people don't like using it. They don't like seeing themselves on camera, and it's the adoption rate has been difficult in our experience.
Except in corporate America, where someone puts a gun to an employee's head,
we were forced to do so. Right?
It's been a hard technology. Once upon a time in my career, I was with IBM, the Satellite Business Systems Division,
mm-hmm.
where we sold point-to-point teleconferencing systems. Everything was painful about that.
Right.
Getting people on camera.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and we're a fairly web-savvy company, obviously, and the adoption rate of video is not very high.
And quality issues still prevail.
Yeah, that's right. It's still choppy, and there's a delay. Our voice systems are very good, as you know, and that tends to be what people use.
Although, being an old voice guy myself, I'm just driven crazy by the acceptance that the American public has had on lower quality voice communication standards to get wider availability, i.e. cell phones.
Right.
When we do the show with someone on a cell phone, quality goes to hell in a handbasket.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. The experience just isn't the same, on a conference call when someone's calling in with a poor connection.
We did one show with a consultant from Annapolis, Maryland, and the quality of that show was much lower in terms of voice content, audio,
right,
than any other show. Oh, the quality was fantastic, how to do business with the federal government. Content was a 10 out of 10.
Right. Now, I will say on the visual side,
I just couldn't convince the guy to get in his car from Annapolis and drive out here to Cincinnati. I can't understand it.
We were talking about the video aspect and using video feeds. Frankly, what we end up using video feeds for most of the time is to show what's on our computer screens, whether it's looking at Salesforce and the metrics, looking at a website, looking at various dashboards we have. That tends to be the video content that goes along with the conference, as opposed to a camera focused on somebody's face.
How long have you been using Salesforce?
Oh, well, We've used Salesforce at iNet since the beginning, and I used it at my last company starting in 2003, right after it came on the market. So
you're a long-time user.
Long-time user, very comfortable with it. We do some things with it that are, I think, fairly unique.
Mm-hmm. The dashboards are exceptionally valuable.
Right.
Well, they can be exceptionally valuable. I knew some CEOs years ago who kept an old deck monitor on his desk, and he could manage by the moment shipments.
Right. We're not too far from that.
You keep a dashboard on your desk?
I have a dedicated screen in my office that flips through a number of dashboards that I monitor.
Sales today.
Yes. You know, and we're an internet company. We don't have products that I can go out on a plant floor and see. All I can see is the data as presented in my dashboard. So I feel a need to look at them often.
Well, we're not in your office, but if we were, how many monitors would you have?
I have three.
Three?
Unless you count the iPad and iPhone, so that would go to five.
Okay. After the show, we'll introduce you to a fellow down the hall who's, I think, has got six on his desk.
It's impressive.
Another internet company.
Impressive.
But he completely got rid of salespeople. Yeah, salespeople zero. Everything is automated. You don't order over the internet from him. He doesn't sell it to you.
Yeah.
That's even more special than your product. In fact, I'm twisting his arm to come on the show, and he doesn't want to talk about it. He will, but he's not ready. Let me ask you one more question. As far as the internet is concerned, since you're an internet-based company, and that is where your media is, what improvements in the internet with this IP6 do you see? Or do you think that's going to be a detriment?
Well, I don't know that it's an improvement or a detriment. It's just a necessity. You know, the fact is we're out of IP addresses. And the only way we can create more IP addresses is to move to this new system, IP6. So it's coming, and we were going to have to adapt to it. But with more and more devices on the internet, they're taking up IP addresses. We're running out.
So this is kind of like when the telephone company switched from 5-digit phone numbers to 7-digit local phone numbers, and then again from 7 to 10-digit phone numbers.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. And for the most part, it should be transparent to most internet users. It's the tech staff that has to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Does your company have 6-digit IP6 addresses yet?
I'm embarrassed to say that we have not migrated to that yet.
Okay, we haven't either. I'm going to be one of the last holdouts.
Yeah.
I'd rather work on different changes. Let's take another short commercial break, and there is time for anyone to call in and ask Troy a question. Again, the number is 646-595-4916. Let's listen to a Sandler commercial.
When you hear about a typical sales training program, does it usually involve a 1 or 2 day seminar where some alleged guru passes down what he claims are the secrets to making sales? At Roth & Associates, I'm the most experienced Sandler sales trainer in Cincinnati. We recognize that truisms and motivating speeches aren't enough to arm sales teams with the tools they need for success. Sales is a hard business. Typical sales training can only provide typical and disappointing results. At Roth & Associates, we use the Sandler methodology of continual reinforcement and ongoing training seminars along with individual coaching to ensure victory in the world of sales. You won't fail because I won't let you. Roth & Associates, 513-646-6523. 513-646-6523. On the web at rothconsulting.net. Finding power in reinforcement. Why do some business owners make lots of money while others endure years of mediocrity? Is it really the economy, the market, the weather, the competition? No. These are all called excuses, which are always plentiful. Hi, I'm Mike Roth, founder of Roth & Associates. I'm the most experienced Sandler sales trainer in Cincinnati.
As a business owner or part of a team, are you accepting excuses from your sales team because you make them yourself? Business winners succeed in spite of this trash. Business winners invest in themselves and their people. For over 15 years, we've been coaching, training, and challenging professionals who are 100% committed to long-term sales growth and profitability, no matter what it takes. If you're deadly serious about increasing your sales, call me at 513-646-6523. This is Mike Roth. I'm back with Troy Augustine from iNet Interactive. Troy, what do you see in the future as an internet company, internet specialty company?
Right, a special interest media company on the internet. I think that there's lots of things that are changing rapidly in this business. The ways that we can help our advertisers target clients, target the audience, is changing rapidly. It used to be that you just put a banner advertisement on a website and you hope for the best. Now you can start to target that advertisement for a long time we've been able to target to geographies, but you can start to target to demographic characteristics, psychographic characteristics, to income and other factors. So, there's a lot of technology that's developing rapidly that, frankly, is pushing some barriers as it relates to privacy, but you can certainly target your audience very crisply now on the internet versus where we started, 6, 10, 15 years ago.
So, in looking at your business, your customer would be an advertising agency.
That's right. An agency or often we're dealing direct with a client selling a particular service to our audience.
Right. In the audiences that you serve, are you working in that niche more or less without competition?
I wouldn't say that at all. We tend to have as part of our portfolio the largest or second largest site within a niche. But there are other ways to reach those audiences on the internet, and we're not the only way. But we're certainly competing against people like Google, where you can use Google to place ads in their search results pages and things of that nature.
But isn't Google much more generalized?
It is and it isn't. I mean, they cover every corner of the economy, if you will. If there's a topic out there, you can search for it and find something.
Sure.
And usually you'll see ads on the side of the page.
Sure, or the pay-per-click ads or the
absolutely.
Paid advertising for the term.
Absolutely. That's their mainstream business. And within the niches where we're playing, they also, of course, get search traffic as well. So we've got clients who, I would venture to guess, most of our clients spend some money with Google, some money with us.
And do you spend money with Google?
A little bit, not much. We drive, on the audience side of the coin we talked about mm-hmm. earlier. The techniques that we use to drive traffic to our website include search engine optimization, which doesn't involve spending money with Google, but it means spending money with experts who know how to do that.
You don't do that in-house?
We do it in-house. That's
okay.
Right. That's right. And we pay them.
Those are salaried people.
Yeah, salaried people, that's right.
Unless you can figure out a way to pay them on incentive base.
Which can be done. And then there's social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, and so forth. Rarely do we actually pay for traffic. The economics usually don't work out too well.
Well, because your niche nature of your marketplace.
Right, absolutely. If we put the best content out there about a specific topic, that generally drives traffic and the rest takes care of itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And your company's been a rapidly growing company. Where are you finding your best new employees? And how are you finding them?
Yeah, I mean, that's a challenge.
Other CEOs have told me that there was one in particular who want to remain nameless, that they couldn't find the talent that they were looking for here in the Cincinnati marketplace, and they were faced with importing people to Cincinnati from other areas of the United States.
Right.
That's not happening to you, is it?
Well, I mean, it is a challenge to find people in the sort of niche areas that we work. So we need editors who understand these niche topics. We need technical folks who understand search engine optimization, web development, and so forth. And they're tough to find, not just in Cincinnati, but globally. It's certainly one area of the economy where the unemployment rate is pretty low. We have the advantage of this virtual organization that we talked about. So we generally will recruit from the Cincinnati market first. But if we can't find the talent we're looking for in the Cincinnati market, we'll open it up. You know, our second choice is usually someone near a satellite office. And then, you know, we'll then move to open it up to wherever they happen to live if that particular position is appropriate for that virtual employee.
So it really doesn't matter where they live, but
right.
You don't have to move them to Cincinnati.
That's correct. I mean, there are some roles that need to be in our headquarters. You know, if you're responsible for maintaining our PCs, we need somebody who's physically there to maintain them. But for the most part, our jobs are be done from a home office, and we'll recruit from wherever they happen to live.
What's the hardest job you have now that you're continuously recruiting for?
Oh, let's see. We just filled a couple. We just filled a role for DevOps, which is a technical term. It's the person who runs the servers that make our websites work. Mm-hmm. And I think we recruited for that position for over 6 months. Fortunately, found a great candidate who lived in Houston who decided to relocate to Westchester. But that's a tough position to fill.
Mm-hmm.
And the salespeople are tough to fill as well. I was just reading an article that said that good salespeople are one of the hardest positions to fill right now.
It's true. What's happened in the past few years is that companies got rid of their C players and then started whittling away at the B players. And when you go to recruit a salesperson, you're going to get a lot of resumes from the C and B players who you don't really want to bring onto your team. The A players who are unhappy where they are, the boss said, hey, you know, to make the same money you made last year, you got to sell twice as much.
Right.
But at least you got a job.
Right.
And the smart A player doesn't go out and quit. Doesn't put his resume or her resume out on monster.com. They let other people know, like me, that they're looking for something new. When I stumble across, connect them to it. We actually work with our clients extremely heavily on profile salespeople, but we don't profile them until we get them through two or three levels to make sure that we are investing in high quality candidates, any one of which should pass the profiles. In fact, we take the strange philosophy that instead of allowing a client to hire someone who should succeed, only allow them to hire people who will succeed, as proven by their skills, their aptitudes, their habits, their ability to reason from the past. There are lots of great salespeople out there.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there are millions of only so-so salespeople.
Right.
And Sandler's moved one step further towards the goal of making it easier for employers like you, Troy, by rolling out later this year a Sandler certification program, which is going to be a really serious set of standardized profile tests based on sales skills. So if someone has sat through a Sandler class, that's not certified. But there'll be at least three levels, silver, bronze, and gold, and there'll be certifications on the sales management side, which is a different skill set than sales. So that if someone has a silver Sandler certification, you know this guy lady has really good skills.
Mm-hmm.
Gold people, they'll be worth more. There are very few. We've had a black belt program here in Cincinnati for sales for the last years, and less than 10% of our clients opt themselves into the more rigorous black belt version.
Hmm.
And many sales jobs, you don't need to have that.
Right. I think that makes sense. I could see a lot of value in that. The idea of benchmarking candidates for a job is something that we do and take seriously. We found certain profiles for different positions within the company work well, and that's one of the considerations that we use when evaluating candidates.
How well are they going to fit?
Right.
We just finished a project up in Columbus for a client where we were matching the prospective salesperson's behavioral styles, personality, skills to the sales manager because they came out of different industries, different backgrounds, and good sales guy, great sales manager, but the sales manager needed a little bit of training and coaching on how to keep this high-producing salesperson because if he continued along his normal road, they would have parted company in 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been a surprise to the sales manager. Why did Joe quit? I didn't cut his commission plan.
Right.
So any last ideas, Troy, that you want to give our audience members?
No, I appreciate you having me on the show. I enjoyed talking with you, and hopefully I put a few nuggets of information out there that people will find of value.
Troy, I'm going to be giving you a copy of the latest Sandler book, The 11 Sandler Principles. That's the corollary to last year's book, The 49 Sandler Rules. As an engineer, you probably learn to love things, learn via rules, and you love that way to do it. That book has made the Amazon bestseller list as number one and the Wall Street Journal bestseller. It was released April 29th, and hope you enjoy reading it. Again, why don't you tell folks how they can get a hold of you, Troy?
Yeah, you can visit our website at inetinteractive.com or feel free to send me an email, troy@inetinteractive.com.
Good. Scott, why don't you take it away? Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, contact Mike at mikeroth@rothconsulting.net or call Mike at 513-753-9400.